Welcome to Hochoka Podcast.
What is a red ribbon skirt, and what is its special meaning? Hello, Metakiepi, and welcome to Hochoka, here at the center of St. Joseph's Indian School's campus. I'm Scott Wooster.
And I am Hope McCloskey. Scott and I are today's Hochoka hosts.
Today, we turn our attention to the contrast between the natural beauty of South Dakota's landscape and the stories of many Indigenous people who have called it home but couldn't enjoy peace, safety, or a long life on this land. We acknowledge that we gather on the traditional lands of the Ocheti Shakowi, Yankton, Ponca, and other tribes. By the treaties of Fort Laramie and other acquisitions, they were dispossessed of that land, which affords us the ability to be here today. We recognize that acknowledgement without action is only a start, and therefore know that we must do more than simply acknowledge. We pay our respect to elders, both past and present, with honor and gratitude for their stewardship of the land. It is our prayer and commitment that these vibrant cultures revitalize and thrive.
Our special guest today is Lily Mendoza, cherished Lakota Unchi and founder of the Red Ribbon Skirt Society, a grassroots collective dedicated to confronting the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women, children, Two-Spirit, and transgender people. A very special Hochoka welcome to you. Lily, please introduce yourself.
Sure. Thank you for that introduction. My name is Lily Mendoza. I am an enrolled member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe here in South Dakota. I reside in the Black Hills. And that's my home. That's where I raise my family, my children, my grandchildren. And yes, that's who I am, and that's where I'm from.
Okay. It's good to have you here in Hochoka. And so we're going to talk a little bit today. One of the first things that we want to talk about is the skirts and the red ribbon skirts. And here at St. Joe's, most of the women here and girls that are here now have ribbon skirts. A lot of people that are viewing don't understand what a ribbon skirt or a red ribbon skirt is. Can you explain that a little deeper?
You know, there are a lot of explanations out there about the ribbon skirt and from all different cultures. And I think what has happened over the past years, they're bringing that back, the tradition of wearing skirts and ribbons. And ribbons, of course, as we know, replace some of the traditional regalia when colonization happened, okay? Mm-hmm. And I can only speak to what I know and what I do. And as far as the red ribbon skirt for us as a society, it really shows us coming together, standing together in solidarity. So when you're out there, and we all wear our red ribbon skirts, and red is the color that the spirits can see. So it's really about, you know, letting people know we're here, we're still here, mm-hmm. and we can do that by wearing those skirts for the public to see. And people, they look at us and say, wow, look at all those red skirts, mm-hmm. you know? So it begins those kinds of conversations that we really do need to have amongst Natives and non-Natives just about anywhere in the world.
Yep.
So that's why we call the Red Ribbon Skirt Society.
Okay.
Right.
And just to further clarify that distinction between a ribbon skirt and a red ribbon skirt, because I think a lot of the women here on campus and girls, young girls, mm-hmm. are wearing colors that were chosen by themselves or mm-hmm. that reflected something in their own life. And I think you hit on it with the red mm-hmm. refers to the color that the spirits can see.
Right, yep.
Is that part of the movement that you're a part of, or is that... Because, I mean, the Red Ribbon Skirt Society, what does that reflect?
You know, if you were to look at marches across the United States and Canada, mm-hmm. the women are going to be wearing red skirts.
Okay.
So yeah. That red is a really huge part of identifying that movement, along with not just the skirt, but the red dresses.
Okay.
Okay. So that's a big part of it. And, yes, we see a lot of women wearing different colors or prints on their skirts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those are the things that they come up with themselves. They feel the power in that material and what it looks like. And also you'll see a lot of those women wearing maybe for graduations. I think families put a lot of thought into that. The sewers, the mothers, the grandmothers.
Absolutely.
This is what we want on your ribbon skirt, you know, to honor them.
In all of my time, I've realized that there isn't a lot of media addressing all of these issues. And the fact that, you know, that and more Indigenous women are going missing and, you know, turning up murdered. And it's unfortunate to me that that wasn't a common knowledge thing that I had to go out and expressly tell people all this information and give them all of the facts. I actually did a presentation on the lack of media representation for Native Americans and Indigenous people on a whole.
Right.
You know, and everyone was just so surprised by the facts and the numbers that I gave, and they couldn't believe that it was all true. And I said, this is something that I grew up with. I was like, this is a reality for me, my cousins, my sisters, my family. We all know that this could happen to us and that it could happen to anybody that we know. And it has sometimes, you know, and it's unfortunate. But why do you think that is? And what's your thoughts on the lack of media representation?
All right. Well, you know, I think you hit it right on the head as far as people don't believe it's happening, you know. I began with the Red Ribbon Skirt Society in 2016. I'm the founder. And at that time, you know, there wasn't a lot. I could say there's more than there was. And there are a lot of big changes as far as the awareness out there. But at that time, there really wasn't. You know, in 2016, I remember young women coming to me and wanting to do a march. And so I helped them organize that. And I don't think we had any media there, to be honest with you. There were all of us there shooting pictures and those sorts of things. And we really had to work with the media and have them become our allies to say, this is important. This is important information that needs to get out there. And now today, if we have something going on and I go to get a hold of media, they're on it. You know, they want to be a part of that movement, especially as individuals. So when they know something is going on, as an individual person, you know, that this could possibly happen to me, it could happen to a relative, they want to be able to cover those stories, okay? And so, you know, we have events coming up, and we do have media there. We're ready for media. And we know that the non-Native person that goes missing gets a lot more attention, okay? And most of the time, it's about the story, okay? And it's about who's going to be the lead in that story and what kind of are they going to be, is it credible for them to do this? Will they move up within the media system if they grab that story, okay? And probably. Okay. But I don't know that locally too many are like going to move up system. But and the thing that I'm seeing and I'm glad you're here today is that we do have now we have more Native women and men in media.
So, Lily, a lot of us here at St. Joe's have been following the work of the Red Ribbon Skirt Society for some time. And the group does a wide array of activities. There's a lot that happens, and you're aware of all of it. A lot of people aren't, but, you know, from basic education to awareness raising to being a presence in grief and healing when these things, terrible things happen to families and people in the society, loved ones go missing. Can you elaborate on that a little bit, the work that, that you do, the wide diversity?
Sure. You know, like I said, we began this work in 2016. That's when the Red Ribbon Skirt Society was founded. Okay, and what we what I started to see and really look at is the process of grieving, and having gone through just kind of going through Facebooks, and looking at those young women that are missing. My first question was, how is the family dealing with this? You know, that was my concern, and it was my concern because I lost a son. Okay, and so I truly understood what it was to lose a child. And so I kind of felt compassion for those families. So I just began contacting families. Okay, and of course their first response to me was, "Who are you? And why are you messaging me?" You know, kind of thing. And so then I would explain to them who I was and kind of what I was doing, and just concerned. You know, it's very seldom that maybe you just get from a stranger, how are you doing, mm-hmm. you know? And so I began to do that. And when I contacted one of the families, you know, she said, it's been 28 years since anybody asked me, how am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And her daughter was 11 years old when mm-hmm. she was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I thought, okay, so this is what we need to do. This is what we need to do as a society, because then that is our responsibility. So we began doing that and contacting families that didn't know who we were, and just saying, hey, we're here for you. Is there anything that we can do to help you? And so it went from education to awareness to really working with those families. And so the families that we do work with, they become part of our society,
mm-hmm.
because now they have a voice. They have a space. They have a voice. And so that's really good to see, and it's really, really healing for those families. It's really healing because you keep on talking about it and talking about it, you know. And they'll be able to, you know, when I first started working with those families, they would get up and speak, and it was tough on them. It was really tough on them. But they've gotten to a place over the last 6 years that they can get up and they can talk.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And they don't fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they see the crowds of people that are out there and other families that are suffering, and they don't want anybody to go through
mm-hmm.
that. So we work with those families. They become our family. They're part of the society.
Yeah.
The other thing that goes along with that is that we began doing this work. We began to see that other communities needed help and how they could put together resources and other people in the community to help. And so we created the MMIW 101. And so we created that. And so it's training that we go out and we do this training with different community organizations, law enforcement, schools, and say, okay, here's the training. We know these are the steps that you all are going through. What happens when you do search and rescue? Who are your partners with that? Okay, who are your tribal partners? Who are your partners outside of the reservation? Okay, so we put all of that training together. And one of the things that we really look at doing is indigenizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
To be a good relative in all of this. And that's a huge thing that I speak to and talk with law enforcement. When I sit down with them, I said, I don't see you as an investigator, I don't see you as a sheriff, I don't see you as a police officer. What I see is you as a relative.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's a whole new concept for them.
It is.
Okay? So that's one of the things we do. And then, of course, in addition to that, we do a lot of helping with financial assistance to the families. We might have a family. One of the bigger things that's really, really sad that we had to do, but it's a need out there, is we had a family whose daughter had been murdered, and she was at the funeral home she was at the hospital in Utah. And so the tribe only allots so much money if somebody passes away. So we're going to help you with $5,000. We're going to help you with $3,000, okay? Well, they couldn't bring, the funeral director had called me and said, you know, Lily, there's not enough money to bring her home, okay? And the family doesn't have it. We can't pick up the cost, you know. So I said, you know what? Bring her home. Send me the bill. She's got to get home, mm-hmm. you know. So those are the kinds of things that we do. And we figure out how to find that money. If we don't have it, we'll find it. So we do that, you know, for the families. Whether it's bringing her home alive or bringing her home deceased.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's kind of what we do. And there's just a whole lot of things
We
do, you know, just from the, I guess, the concept and thought of grief. There's a whole lot of stuff that we do to help those families, you know, as much as we could possibly help them so they don't need to worry about things.
Mm-hmm.
Funeral expenses, you know, food for the wake services. You know, if they need a quilt, we'll help get a quilt. Families that need to travel back and forth from the reservation, we will help with gas, you know. Those are the kinds of things we do.
And mm-hmm. so as you go around and you do trainings with law enforcement and others in official capacity who have, mm-hmm. you know, a chance to make a difference, you would have to walk a fine line sort of making relatives with somebody, let's say, that doesn't understand what your approach is and what you're trying to do, mm-hmm. you might find backlash maybe from what you do, or you also might find that you have to, I would think you'd have to be very nuanced in your approach to right. what you do with that.
We make sure that we conduct ourselves as respectful women mm-hmm. and function as a society. Okay. I know that there's all these questions, but aren't you the one that is going out and speaking? Aren't you the one who's making those decisions? I said, oh, no, not really. Mm-hmm. Okay. I take everything back to the society. Mm-hmm. And we sit and we talk about it and we talk about it. And then a decision is made. Okay, then let's go ahead and do that. Or let's do that.
So, Lily, I genuinely don't want to overlook the fact that this is hard and very difficult work. When I started my career, I went on a quick work trip, I guess I could say, where we went and interviewed people for the MMIP project that Kelloland happened to do, and I was just the producer that was assigned, mm-hmm. and I was very grateful that I was. But from going there and listening to, I want to say, at least 15 of these stories of different women's families, of them finding out that they've been missing for so long, or they've been found murdered with no answers, tons of questions, and legitimately no help, I was exhausted after a week. You know, I was so saddened by all of this and the fact that it was just so close to home to me. What started you on this path? What keeps you motivated to keep going down this hard path that, from my experience, is just so, I don't know, so
overwhelming.
So traumatic, yeah. And overwhelming, yeah.
Right, yeah. Well, I guess, I guess the thing for me is that I have the support of my family, mm-hmm. okay? Especially my children. My daughter actually in Minneapolis has a group up there. My granddaughter is involved in that group. I think that's a huge part of it. And also, too, not only just my children, but my sisters are getting involved in the movement. My brothers are involved in the movement, you know, in some shape or form they are, okay? And then the other thing is ceremony, mm-hmm. you know, going to do sweat, go to Sundance, you know. When I go to Sundance, I dance for the women mm-hmm. and I dance for those families. And for me, that's healing. It's a personal, I guess, when I go do that for those families, because in some way I'm helping them. They know when I go to Sundance I'm going to be dancing for their daughters, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. because a lot of them are older and they can't get out there and dance,
yeah.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, now that you said I was an Unchi, you know, what did you say it was? I don't know your title. Gave me.
Unchi.
I was like, what? Okay. So anyway, that's what I do. I do for those family, but I do it for myself too, because you know that it's a cleansing, mm-hmm. Especially when we go and do sweat, and you know, I pray in the mornings. I put up, you know, tobacco. I put out tobacco. I smudge. All those things help. Mm-hmm. They get us through those times, yeah. you know. And, you know, to me, it's a way of life for me. And I'm dedicated to this movement. And the question is, well, how long will you do this? I've had that question, you know. And it's like, well, I guess until I can't speak or walk anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but you know what? There's a group of women that will take over that.
Mm-hmm.
And so are my children.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I'm dedicated to this. This is my work, you know. So, hope that answered you.
Yeah. I love that your passion is so strong. You know, I'm 7 years into doing what you do, and I love that you rely on the ceremonies too.
Right.
So we talk about Okeechiapi, right? It helps the people, right?
Right.
And that's what you do. And ceremony, whether it's Sundance or Inipi,
mm-hmm.
you find that there is no gray area. It's either right or it's wrong, and you know exactly mm-hmm. as you're doing it. And so it can give you a lot of strength to run into a lot of brick walls when you're trying to do the kind of work that,
right.
that you're doing
yeah.
and helping too. I mean, it's not all brick walls, but it's difficult work. And so
mm-hmm.
We thank you for your passion and what you do. Truly, it's meaningful work, and we say Wopila to you for doing that. And also Wopila for being here today in Ho Choka here as we talk.
Mm-hmm.
And hope Wopileta, you too, for being here too. It's good to have you back in the studio again. It's been a while. We'd like to say Wopileta to our viewers as well for joining us here at the center of St. Joseph's Indian Schools campus, where we talk about issues that are central to Native American education today. Until next time, stay centered.